Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Guardian.
Hello, this is Brexit Means, The Guardian's weekly podcast bringing you up to date with all the latest developments from Brexit land. Or not. I'm Dan Roberts, a man with the oxymoronic job title of Brexit policy editor. And with me to discuss why there's no policy and nothing seems to be budging in Brussels is our correspondent there, Jennifer Rankin.
Hi, Dan. Very good to join you.
You're actually ringing in from Luxembourg, I think. And we've got to talk about the deadlock, right? I mean, the moment has come. There's no point beating around the bush. It's time for the Brexit Means podcast to talk about the dreaded no deal. The Brits had a dinner last night with the Commission that seemed to go nowhere. Theresa May's attempts to deal directly with national capitals have run into the sand, and after this week's summit, talks are due to restart in December. But what's likely to be different then? Is this just the dark before the dawn, do you think, Jennifer, or are we literally running out of road?
I think we really have reached the point where both sides are running out of things to talk about, and they really need movement from one or the other. And it really does come down to money. The EU really does want to see what the UK is prepared to pay when it comes to the Brexit bill. And the UK is refusing to do that until it gets a better sign on the future relationship. So for that reason, we're completely stuck, completely deadlocked. And it doesn't appear that last night's dinner solved anything.
What do you think they actually talked about? I mean, they were in there for what, over an hour and a half, right?
Yes, it was around 90 minutes. So it was probably a rather short dinner by Brussels standards. And there was a very sort of fairly warm and constructive statement afterwards that said the talks were constructive, although it gave very little away. And in fact, you could even see a very subtle rebuke to the UK in the joint statement, which said that noted that the process of being discussed in the framework agreed between the EU27 and the UK. So you could read that as a very careful slap down to the UK that it's not possible to go over the heads of the negotiating team in Brussels and negotiate directly with Berlin or Paris. These negotiations will have to be run through the EU process.
Yes, I mean, maybe I'm being a bit unkind, but it seemed to me about as subtle as a house brick to the head. I mean, it was basically saying, you know, you signed up to this, these are the terms, get used to it, right?
Yes, I mean, I think all along there's been an idea that the UK can fix things with Angela Merkel and the French president now, Emmanuel Macron. And this really continues a theme of David Cameron's premiership, that he always relied on getting a deal in Berlin to fix his problems in Europe. And he found out that it wasn't possible. And Theresa May is now learning the same lesson.
Mm. And what do you think happens at the summit later this week? I mean, are the Brits right to detect a note of schadenfreude creeping in on behalf of the EU27?
Well, I think the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, is treading very carefully because if the EU27 has so far been united on this stance of no talks on the future relationship until we sort out the divorce. But there are nuances, there are different approaches, and there are some countries who would like to move ahead a bit more quickly with the talks about the future, especially countries such as Belgium, the Netherlands, which are going to be hard hit by Brexit, and they would like more clarity about what's further down the line. So far, we haven't seen a breakout of division. We have seen a sort of difference in language. And so for that reason, I think the EU negotiator will be treading very carefully to try and keep the 27 together.
Mm. But am I right in thinking they need unanimity to change the negotiating mandate? So we go at the pace of the most hawkish, right?
I think we will. Yes, we will go at the pace of the most hawkish or the country that's least prepared to pay the Brexit bill, and that's Germany. Because if the UK leaves without paying its obligations on contingent liabilities and pensions, that means Germany will have to find these extra billions, and that's exactly what the German government doesn't want to do. And that's why we've seen that, contrary to all Theresa May's expectations, it's actually been Germany that's been taking a very tough line in the Brussels meetings on Brexit, and they're really sticking to their guns on that, and we're not likely to see any movement in October. I think what we will see is some sign that maybe the EU27 will start talking about the future relationship with the UK. They hope that that will be enough to show, so Theresa May can show her backbenchers that she is making progress, although I suspect many people in the Conservative Party would find that a very damp squib, to say the least.
Well, are the Brits involved at all this week? Will they have another opportunity to perhaps bend some ears?
Theresa May will be there. She'll be in Brussels on Thursday for the regular EU summit, which is something that has been long planned. But she will not take part in any of the Brexit negotiations, which happen on Friday morning. So once again, she will be out the room when all the key decisions about the UK's Brexit future are being made.
I'm just wondering whether she'll have one last chance to bend some ears. I mean, she's been hitting the phones this week with Macron.
I'm sure that she will be, her people will be arranging a round of bilateral meetings, and she will be pressing the case. That's certainly a likely thing she would do, and not to miss any opportunity. But at the end of the day, the negotiations will be done without the UK, and that's the framework that the EU has created through the through its Article 50 process, and they're being very strict about that.
So I want to kind of explore now, I suppose, what happens next if there is some sort of bust up. I mean, it seems to me, as you said at the outset of this podcast, there's not much that's going to change now between now and December in terms of where both sides' negotiating positions are. And I wonder whether the only way things are going to move, and perhaps move backwards, but nonetheless change, is if there is some sort of dramatic gesture by the Brits that they just flounce off and they say, right, enough with this, you guys are being obstructionist, we're going to walk out. And then hopefully see that might concentrate minds or force something to unlock. But is that how you see a no deal situation taking place? I mean, what might a walkout look like from the Brussels perspective?
A walkout is the scenario that the Brussels negotiators have always feared from the beginning. I don't think at the moment it's the most likely scenario. I think there's still the room to do a deal. I think if a walkout does happen, it's probably likely to happen after December, when it's clear if there is no deal, when it's clear that the negotiations are really at a deadlock. But it's a very high risk strategy, and if the UK does leave the negotiating table and walk out, then it will have to be very sure that it's ready not to come back in, because if in order to come back in, it would have to secure a very big concession, and there are no signs that the EU is ready to grant such a big concession. So it's an extremely high-risk tactic, and it should only be undertaken if you're prepared to walk out and never come back.
Yes, it's not something that you do lightly, and I guess it's not something that you do unless you think that it would have some effect, if you think that it would concentrate minds. And it feels to me that there's a lot on the other side who would just treat that with a shrug of the shoulder, it feels a bit, at the moment, right?
I think we're at a walkout stage yet. I think the feeling here is that there is a deal to be done, and there is a sense that the EU will say yes in December, almost no matter where we are, because there will be growing pressure on the EU27 to have a deal as well. They don't want a no-deal Brexit. They don't want these talks to collapse in chaos. That's going to have seriously damaging effects on the EU as well. So there's a very fine line to walk here, and I don't think we've got to a stage of complete breakdown yet.
No, I think that's right. I suppose what worries me is that I can't see them agreeing that in December unless the Brits are prepared to commit to a bigger check. And the deadlock at the moment seems to be around the basis that the Brits, rightly or wrongly, already feel like they've written a big check. I mean, they think they put 20 billion on the table, and that's plenty. And they're at least 20 or 30 billion shy of what the other side think is needed. And I just I'm wondering how they move forward without at least meeting halfway on that money. And I'm also wondering how Theresa May has the political cover back home to do that, given how fragile everything is at the moment.
Yes, it's a very good question, and I do think money is now the central issue, because it does seem that both sides have agreed that Ireland is such a difficult and intractable problem that they will park it and continue to discuss it, but it's not going to hold up progress. The citizens' issue, the other part of the divorce settlement, is largely there. There's agreement in reach. So it really does come down to money, and it's not obvious who's going to move first, because although, remember, David Davis, the Brexit Secretary, said a few months ago that the UK has moral obligations, but he's never been prepared to say what those obligations are. And now the EU are really pressing for the detail on that. They're saying it's not good enough just to suggest you might be ready to pay for these liabilities and pensions. We want to know exactly what you're prepared to pay. But yes, as soon as the UK start to come forward with their offer, then people will start to calculate exactly what that means in billions of pounds. And that will be, it'll go well beyond the 20 billion we already know Theresa May has promised. So it's very difficult to see how this can be unlocked at the moment.
Mm. One of the worrying dynamics I've seen over here is that the people who advocate a clean Brexit, who believe that no deal is perhaps not so bad, are urging the government to get on with this brinkmanship, because I think some of them see next year as potentially the transition phase. But instead of a transition phase taking place after Article 50 reaches its conclusion, they think that if we are going to walk away with no deal, we're rapidly running out of time to start preparing all of the relevant customs infrastructure and so forth. And they sort of think not only should we be having that as a contingency, but perhaps it might be no bad thing to bring things to a head this Christmas rather than next Christmas, so that we really do have some credibility when we say we're going to walk away, because we'll have a year to get used to it. Does that make any sense to you, do you think? I mean, is that something that that anybody in Brussels is contemplating, or is that sort of the pie in the sky?
Well, President Donald Tusk, the former Polish Prime Minister who chairs the European Council, he said last week that we are still hoping for sufficient progress by December. But if it's not found, then he said, together with our UK friends, we will have to think about where we were heading. So that really did seem to suggest to me that he is looking beyond what will happen if there is that. And that does seem to, it does seem to be sort of staring the EU in the face, that then you would be in a situation of an agreed no deal where the UK's membership will lapse in March 2019 and both sides prepare for that day. And as far as the EU's preparations go for a no deal, that's something that is certainly being kept under wraps. And officially, that the EU's negotiators will say that they're not working on a no deal scenario. They continue to negotiate in good faith and want to get an agreement. Although you think surely someone has a plan in a drawer as to how to protect the EU from this kind of scenario. I think on the UK side, though, we're really running out of time even now for a no deal, no transition period, because if you look at the preparations at ports, it doesn't seem that there's anything like the infrastructure and investment going into car parks and warehouses that would be needed in order to be very soon, very imminently out of the EU customs union in only 18 months' time.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned the phrase agreed no deal, because although that might sound like a bit of a contradiction to some of our listeners, it strikes me that we're all oversimplifying it by talking about no deal as a sort of monolithic entity with only one flavour, that actually there are, just as there are within the realm of a deal, there is a whole spectrum of different scenarios. Within the flavours of no deal also range from sort of very, very acrimonious, sort of positively spiteful, to something that perhaps is just a sort of friendly sort of farewell and let's make the best of it sort of thing. And I just wanted to sort of try and unpick what that might mean, because we've talked a lot about the economic consequences of no deal in terms of sort of reverting to WTO tariffs and having to have customs arrangements and things. But it strikes me that the legal consequences, the political consequences, are potentially far more serious, in that if there is an acrimonious no deal, this is the situation that people talk about where the planes don't fly, where there's a lapse in existing aviation agreements and so forth, and literally the only alternative is to say, well, you can't land. And I just wonder whether there is a sort of a grey area in between where perhaps some of these existing agreements are rolled over, or there is a slightly more friendly version of no deal. Does that make any sense to you, do you think?
Yes, I think that does make sense, that there's the no deal that you plan for and the no deal that just sort of explodes in everybody's faces and causes chaos and huge confusion, and then you are in that scenario where the planes don't fly. I mean, I imagine if we are looking at that situation from December, then maybe you will get into the room of people talking about, well, how do we best protect ourselves? How do we ensure that the planes keep flying? How do we ensure that there aren't any of these sort of sudden jolts to the economy on both sides? But I think so there will be time to work those arrangements out. But then again, it always comes back to the central point that if the UK wants a future trading relationship with the EU, that's going to be done against the backdrop of existing sort of mood and temper. And if things do become very bad tempered, and there is a sudden break off and where the UK is hurtling out of the EU with no deal, that's going to make it extremely difficult, I would expect, to negotiate the kind of deep free trade agreement that the UK says that it wants.
I mean, do you think money has a potential to poison that too? I mean, I wonder whether if the Brits walk away, not just not offering 20 billion, but paying nothing, I mean, including the sort of immediate obligations of the current budget round, won't they be seen as in default effectively by Brussels? Won't that turn us into a sort of legal pariah in the eyes of many? Or do you think they'll just sort of see that as part of the argy-bargy?
I think you're absolutely right. I think it would be poisonous if the UK walked away within the EU's eyes, not paying its obligations for 44 years of membership of the club. I think that would poison any discussions on the future relationship, trade and foreign policy and all sorts of areas beyond. And I think that would be extremely difficult for the UK to get the kind of economic integration it would like. And it's already a tall order. In fact, the UK is already going to have to sacrifice quite considerably on economic integration if it does want to leave the EU and get a different relationship in terms of sovereignty. That's already going to be a big demand for the British economy. And I think if this is against the backdrop of a very poisonous and nasty divorce, then I think things are going to look very unpromising indeed for that future relationship.
Yes, because I think this is where we get back to a sort of a disconnect between how the two sides approach this, in that the Brits see money as another bargaining chip, and if there isn't a bargain to be struck, then that's just one of those chips that gets put back in the pocket and never gets used. And whereas it feels to me, and I'm not quite sure whether they're right to think this, but nonetheless, it feels to me that a lot of the people on the EU side don't see money as a bargaining chip, but a sort of a sign of good faith that unless we settle our debts, then we can't get into the bargaining phase. And I'm just curious as to what sort of, if that is how they view it in the event of a bad deal, what sort of remedies there are. Do they come after us in the courts? Do they impound British goods at the border? I mean, how nasty could this get if that is how they view it?
I think it sounds like a question for lawyers and something that could run for years and years, and certainly also something the EU would be loath to do. I mean, there have been scenarios discussed where this could go to some kind of international tribunal, maybe one of the courts at The Hague to try and settle the question of the Brexit bill. But this is certainly going to take years, and the EU would have no guarantees that it would come down in their favour. So, and I think you did hit the nail on the head, really, that for the EU, this is not a bargaining chip. They see this as something that is not there, not up for negotiation, but simply the UK fulfilling its promises over the last few decades. And Michel Barnier, the G20 chief negotiator said as much at his last press conference, that this was not something he was going to make concessions over. He didn't see the need for concessions because this is the UK has promised to pay. So you could say that given that the British government has said they do have these moral obligations to the EU, maybe could save some time and diplomatic heartache further down the line, simply to give some kind of signal as to what they might be prepared to pay.
Yes, well, it sounds like it's going to be a very bumpy road over the next few weeks. We'll have to leave it there for this week. My thanks to Jennifer Rankin for joining us. Next week, we're discussing Brexit and food. So if you have any questions about that, email us at brexitmeans@theguardian.com. Please subscribe and review on all your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Twitter. Just search for Guardian Podcasts. Till next week, I've been Dan Roberts. The producer is Rowan Slaney. And this was Brexit Means. Thank you for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.